chapter 1, the curse upon the Yadu dynasty, text number 5. Evam vyavasito rajan. Evam vyavasito rajan. Satya sankalpa ishvara. Satya sankalpa ishvara. Shapa vyajena vipranam. Shapa vyajena vipranam. Sanjare swakulam vibhu. Sanjare swakulam vibhu. Evam vyavasito rajan. Satya sankalpa ishvara. Shapa vyajena vipranam. Sanjare swakulam vibhu. In this way, Vyavasita, deciding for certain, Rajan, O King, Satya Sankalpa, whose desire always proves true. Ishvara, the Supreme Lord. Shapa Vyajena, by the pretext of a curse. Vipranam, of Brahmanas. Sanjare, withdrew. Swakulam, his own family. Vibhu, the Almighty. Translation, this appears long translation. Long purport. My dear King Parikshit, when the Supreme Almighty Lord, whose desire always comes to pass, had thus made up his mind, he withdrew his own family on the pretext of a curse spoken by an assembly of Brahmanas. Purport. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur has made a very important comment on this verse. He states that since the intentions of the Supreme Lord, Krishna Chandra, are always perfect, it was certainly in consideration of the greatest benefit for the entire world that he destroyed his own family on the pretext of a curse by Brahmanas. In this connection, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has shown a parallel in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, appearing as his own devotee. Lord Chaitanya appeared along with his first plenary expansion, known as Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and with Lord Advaita Prabhu. All three personalities, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Advaita Prabhu, are accepted by Vaishnava Acharyas to be in the category of Vishnu Tattva, the full status of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These three personalities of Godhead perceive that in the future, their so-called seminal descendants would get undue recognition and thus, being puffed up, would commit great offenses against those who are actually Vaishnava gurus or representatives of the Lord. Every living being is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Mamayavamsa. Every living entity is originally a son of God. Yet to execute his pastimes, the Lord selects certain highly qualified living entities whom he allows to take birth as his personal relatives. But those living entities who appear as descendants of the Lord's personal family may undoubtedly become proud of such a position and thus abuse the great adulation they receive from ordinary people. In this way, such persons may artificially get undue attention and divert people from the actual principle of spiritual advancement, which is to surrender to the pure devotee who represents the Lord. The last 8 verses of the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita give a description of the pure devotees the Lord permits to act as acharyas, or spiritual leaders of mankind. In other words, simply to take birth in the personal family of Krishna is not a qualification for being a spiritual master. Since according to Bhagavad Gita, Pittaham Asya Jagata, every living entity is eternally a member of the Lord's family. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Samaham Sabhuteshu Nami Dishu Sinapriya, I am equal to everyone. No one is my enemy and no one is my special friend. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears to have a special family, such as a Yadu dynasty, such a so-called family is a special arrangement of the Lord's pastimes in order to attract the conditioned souls. When Krishna descends, he acts as if he were an ordinary person in order to attract the living entities to his pastimes. Therefore, Krishna acted as though the Yadu dynasty was his personal family, although in fact every living entity is a member of his family. Ordinary people, however, not understanding the higher principles of spiritual knowledge, easily forget the actual qualification of a bona fide spiritual master, and instead give undue importance to people born in the Lord's so-called family. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, therefore, avoided this impediment on the path of spiritual enlightenment by leaving behind no children. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu married twice, he was childless. Nityananda Prabhu, who is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, did not accept any of the natural sons born of his own son, Sri Virabhadra. Similarly, Lord Advaita Acharya divested of his association of all of his sons except Achyutananda and 2 others. Achyutananda, the chief faithful son of Advaita Acharya, had no seminal progeny, and the remaining 3 of the 6 sons of Lord Advaita fell from the path of devotion to the Lord and are known as rejected sons. In other words, the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu allowed little facility for continuing a so-called seminal family to create confusion. The respect shown to the conception of seminal lineage in deference to the ideas of the smartas is unfit to be accepted by one who actually understands the supreme truth from Vedic authority. Other acharyas or spiritual masters have also demonstrated this point in their own families. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, our own beloved spiritual master, who is a mighty author of the Srimad Bhagavatam series, was born in a family of pure devotees, and he himself exhibited all the symptoms of pure devotional service from his very childhood. Sri Prabhupada eventually came to the Western countries and exhibited unprecedented spiritual potency in establishing the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. In a few short years, he translated more than 50 large volumes of Vedic philosophy. But by his practical activities, he certainly understood to be a most empowered representative of the Lord. Nonetheless, his own family members, although devotees of Krishna, did not at all come up to the proper standard of devotional service and are therefore not given attention by the members of ISKCON. The natural tendency for the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness would be to offer all reverence and worship to the members of Sri Prabhupada's immediate family. But since by Krishna's arrangement these family members are not at all on the platform of pure devotional service, the members of ISKCON give them hardly any attention. But instead worship those who actually exhibit the qualities of highly advanced Vaishnavas, regardless of their so-called birth. In other words, birth cannot constitute the qualification of a respectable person, even when one is born in the Lord's own family or in their child's family. What to speak of an ordinary, wealthy or learned family? In India, there is a class of men known as Nityananda Vamsa, who claim to be direct descendant of Lord Nityananda, and therefore worthy of the highest respect for their position in devotional service. In this regard, Sri Prabhupada has written in an act of devotion, "In the Middle Ages, after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya's great associate Lord Nityananda, a class of priestly persons claimed to be the descendants of Nityananda, calling themselves the Goswami caste. They further claim that the practice and spreading of devotional service belong only to their particular class, which was known as Nityananda Vamsa. In this way, they exercised artificial power for some time, until Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the powerful acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, completely smashed their idea. There was a great hard struggle for some time, but it has turned out successful, and it is now correctly and practically established that devotional service is not restricted to a particular class of men. Besides that, anyone who is engaged in devotional service is already a high-class brahmana. So Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's struggle for this movement has come out successful. It is on the basis of his position that anyone from any part of the universe can become a Gaudiya Vaishnava. In other words, the essence of spiritual knowledge is that every living being, regardless of his present status in life, is originally a servant of the Supreme Lord. And it is the mission of the Lord to reclaim all of these fallen living entities. Despite his past situation, any living being who is willing to surrender again at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord or his bona fide representative can purify himself by strictly adhering to the rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga, and thus act as a high-class brahmana. Nonetheless, the seminal descendants of the Lord think themselves to have acquired their ancestors' character and position. Thus, the Supreme Lord, who is a well-wisher of the entire universe and especially of his devotees, bewilders the discriminatory power of his own descendants in such a contradictory way that these seminal descendants became recognized as deviant and the actual qualification to be a representative of the Lord, namely, unalloyed surrender to the will of Krishna, remains prominent." What is left to say? Powerful purport. Evam vyavasito rajan satya sankalpa ishvara shapa vyajena vipranam sanjare swa kulam vibhu. My dear King Parishik, when the Supreme Almighty Lord, whose desire always comes to pass, had thus made up his mind, he withdrew his own family on the pretext of a curse spoken by an assembly of brahmanas. Om magyana timrandasya gananjana salakaya shakshamritam yena tasmai shri gadave namaha. Namo om vishnu padaya krishna prasapane shrimati bhakti vidanta swami niti namne. Namaste sarasati devi gauravani picharine nivise sasanyo vadiva sichade shatarine. So Krishna is known as Satya Sankalpa. That means whose desire always proved to be true. Is it Mahabharata? He stated, Parasha Shakti Vivadayasivate, Svabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriyacha. Krishna, he has innumerable energies. And all these energies are working perfectly in different ways. And just by his desire, jnana, action, or activities, or anything, or they just manifest automatically, simply by the desire. And it also said in Veda, just simply by the desire of Krishna, the sun is shining, the moon is shining, the wind is blowing. Everything is just manifesting, simply by the desire of Krishna. So when Krishna wants something done, it will be done. And when Krishna proclaims something, it will happen. That's Krishna. Sometimes people, they make so many proclamations, but it never come to pass. Sometimes they have this so-called Messiah, who has a message from God. How many times it happened, even during our lifetime, we have read in the news that some certain sect, they proclaim, this is the end of the world. The end of the world has come. And then they all assemble by the ocean or something. And then it's on such and such a day and such a time, that will be the end of the universe, the world. And they came and assembled there and do whatever chant they do. And then the time came and the time passed and they were like, oh, it didn't happen, and they walked home. How many times has that happened? So many people make so many proclamations. But for Krishna, when he desires something, it will happen. So what does Krishna desire? So many things. First of all, the universe, this material world, has been created just simply to facilitate the living entity's perverted desire to enjoy separate from Krishna. Otherwise, there's no reason for existence of this material world. But because the living entity has a desire to enjoy separate from Krishna, to be independent lord and controllers, enjoyers. So this is a playground for the illusion conditioned soul. The playroom, the playground, where they can try to be God or imitate God. Just like in the house, sometimes a child becomes impudent and demands so many things. Then the father says, okay, time out, go to your room. So inside the room, he has his toys and he plays with his toys and he can do so many things. And sometimes, I don't like this one. And he really, after a while, really feel like he's the controller of the whole thing. Sometimes you ever watch children play? When they play, sometimes they're so into it. They're so into their game, so into their play, you feel like they're just part of the whole thing. They really feel like they're there now. And they're really controlling the whole thing. Or then when they watch sometimes children play computer game, people play computer game. They have the controller, the console. They think like they're really controlling the situation. And when they get shot, they're It's amazing, isn't it? So, this is what this material world. So actually for any person, for any jiva, as soon as you give up this desire, illusory desire that I'm the controller and enjoyer, and accept his constitutional position as supreme, as the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and act as such, the material will just disappear. It just disappear. Mind just disperse. So actually, spiritual world, material world, is not so much a physical location. It's not like I have to go to the spiritual world. It is more a matter of consciousness. What separates the spiritual realm from the material realm is a matter of consciousness. Therefore, a pure devotee of the Lord, even though he may be in this material world, but he does not really live in the material world. Wherever he goes, that's Vrindavan, because he carries Krishna with him in his heart. So anywhere he goes, it's Vrindavan. Anywhere he goes, the place becomes a theater. It's just like this place here, Melbourne Town. Prabhupada was in one lecture. He said, this is not just Melbourne, not just another building in Melbourne. This is Vaikuntha, because Krishna resides here. But this is Vaikuntha. But unless we have the consciousness, we do not perceive this. What we see is just some marbles and some stones and some buildings and some this and that, so many things. But for a pure devotee with transcendental vision, he sees just Chintamani, not just some bricks. It's Chintamani, some terrible wish fulfilling. It's a spiritual world. So it's a matter of consciousness. So actually, a lot of things, as we were saying the other day, a lot of things that we learn in Krishna consciousness practice is a matter of our consciousness and a matter of our perception of things, how we perceive things. Because there's so much misunderstandings in the world today. As is very elaborately explained in the purport, that just by birth, one cannot make his claim to fame, just because of birth. Although, if one is born in a highly qualified family, for example, Prabhupada gives an example, if one may be born as a son of a high court judge, but that does not automatically make him a high court judge. One may be born as a son, a son of a surgeon, eye surgeon. And then he proclaimed, he said, my father is eye surgeon, so I'm also eye surgeon, I can operate on your eyes. Can that happen, Dr. G?
Impossible.
Yes, you may have good possibility of becoming one because of the association, but it does not automatically qualify one. In fact, even someone born in a very rich family does not necessarily make him rich, because if his mentality is poor, he may inherit all this money, but he will just flounder it away and become a pauper. And it happens again and again. So many examples of it. Children born, inherited a lot of money, and then they just squandered it away. I know of one devotee. His parents died in a car accident. When he reached 18, he inherited so much money. I mean, so much. But it's still a lot of money, actually. He inherited something like over $100,000 when he reached 18. But he figured, as long as I have this money, I will not be able to get welfare. So within a few months, he just squandered the money away. In a few short months, he just squandered it away. And then after that, later he joined the temple and became a devotee. And then the next time, when he was reaching 23, he was due to inherit another amount, similar amount. But this time, I make my move fast. I said, look, you're going to inherit, you have to give a certain percentage to the temple. Okay? We need a new Vyasa sign for Prabhupada, new altar, whatever. But. So, put aside a chunk for some devotional service. And sure enough, within a few months, boom, the rest of it was all squandered away. You see? So, as is stated here, that just because one is born in the family of the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not automatically qualify him. After all, as mentioned in Prabhupada, we are all belongs to the family of Krishna. My mind wants to jiva loke, jiva buddha sanatana. And Krishna says, I am the seed-giving father of all living entities. So Krishna is our father and we are all children of Krishna. So what makes one more special than the other? Just because in the past time we appear, one appear in the descendant, does not necessarily automatically qualify one. There's so many examples you, as mentioned here, descendants of Nityananda Prabhu. The Nityananda Vamsas, and they claim exclusive right to the Sankirtan movement. And this was very nicely and successfully defeated by Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He defeated and smashed all these misconceptions. He was not very popular among such deviants. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta was not very... in fact, he was feared. He was feared by the deviant philosophers. He was feared by the Mayavadis. He was even feared by all these upper sampradayas. That means so-called Vaishnava sampradayas that do not strictly follow the injunctions of the scriptures. In Bengal itself, there are so many upper sampradayas. Bao and Wao and all that. So many different names they have. And the most, one of the most prominent one is Gauranga Nagari. Is that right? Gauranga Nagari. In fact, one of these sampradaya, their philosophy is so similar to our Iskcon philosophy. Everything more practically is the same. But the main deviation from the philosophy was that they worship Lord Chaitanya in the mood of gopis or something like that. Because of that, they deviated. Because that was not the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So how can we worship? We worship him as a, like a gopi. In the mood of the gopis. So actually, as we start to study scripture and really understand, gain to the depth of understanding this Krishna conscious philosophy, get into understanding what Sri Prabhupada has actually given us, we will feel immensely fortunate. We will feel so very fortunate. There's so much speculation going on out there. All forms of so-called spiritual life. And you'll be shocked and surprised when you pick out any of this New Age magazine. And you find so many stuff going on there. It's amazing. Things you've never even heard of before. Sometimes they used to put it up in a Gopal, this magazine. What is called this magazine? New Idea? No, not New Idea. Anyway, it's about all this spiritual stuff. So-called pseudo-spiritual stuff. New Age stuff. And people are really into it. Last year I attended one exhibition. Because Radha Chan was there. He had a stand selling his smoothies and all that. So I had passed. I went in just to have a look. They had a separate area which is like twice the size of this room, only for people with tarot readings. Each one has a little table there. And all this, the psychics, tarot reading, angelic reading, this reading, that reading, so many reading. And there are dozens and dozens of these people in there. And people are queuing up just to go and see them. Just to get their reading done. It's really amazing. So many people there, when they're searching for spiritual life, they become misled by all this hula hula, all this stuff. Or even when they come to Vedic philosophy, they start this meets the Mayavadis and presents some concorded versions of what of the conclusion of these Vedas. Everything is one, it's all one, it's this, it's, you know. Someone was just telling me recently, he met the mother of a friend, a girl he knew for many years back. And she told her, so yeah, she got married recently. Oh, really? Oh, how? I went there for the wedding. It actually was the orange people, the Osho, Rajneesh Bhagawan. You know, he's dead now, but in India, so then he's sometimes known as a sex guru. He really take arranged marriage really to the extreme, right? So what happened to this girl was that the mother arrived there in New York. She's Australian, and the day before the marriage, he said, "So who are you going to marry?" She said, "No idea." On even the day before the marriage, she has no idea who she was going to marry, right? So on the day of the wedding, during the ceremony, they'll have all the men on one side, one line, women one side, and then they just move forward and boom, man, woman, boom, okay, you get married. It's like a lottery. Because after all, for them, what does it matter, you know? It's all free sex anyway. Although they call themselves sannyasis and sannyasini, they all wear orange, and they're all supposed to be sannyasis, but they're married. I remember many years back, there was a TV program in Sweden. They did a TV program on this different spiritual group. So we were there, Ananda Maga was there, Rajneesh was there, and I think Scientology was there, a couple of others, you know. So ours was really nice. The starting of when they came to us, was like, shoo, the deities, go in Mahadi Purusha, the greeting of the deities, and that's really nice. So anyway, the show about the Russians, this one couple, just woke up in bed, you know, so in their bedroom, they just woke up, and the first thing to do is pick up a cigarette and light it up. And that's what they do. And a lot of people are following them. In fact, this guy was so rich before he had something like, 18 Rolls Royce. In his ashram in America, he had 18 Rolls Royce. And people are just flooding, just throwing money at him. And this is the same thing with the, all these so-called people who claim to be incarnations and so on. Eh? People are just flocking to them and throwing money at their feet. So much ignorance is there. And then even when we amongst the Vaishnavas, there are different shades and colors and to it. So if we actually think about all this and get to the depth of the of what Prabhupada has given us, we just like, wow, man, I am so fortunate. What pious activities have we performed that we can remember? At least this lifetime. What pious activities have we performed this lifetime to qualify us for this gem? This gift. Why were we chosen? Why were we picked? That's why it's called costless mercy. It does not have to have a cost to it. It's costless. His mercy is costless. All we can say is that I don't know what the reasons may be, neither do I care what the reasons is. I'm in this fortunate position. What am I going to do with it? What am I going to do with this great fortune that has been bestowed upon me? That should be our main question. And that's why it's said that ones who have actually got the mercy of the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he's so fortunate, but if he does not take it seriously, he becomes so unfortunate that even the rock will cry out of pity for such a person. One can be the most fortunate and turn into the most unfortunate. Too extreme. And to become most unfortunate is when we do not appreciate this great fortune that we have, that has been bestowed upon us. When we do not fully appreciate it. It's very often one takes things for granted. This is one of the greatest enemy that we face. Complacency. We become complacent in our life. We become slack. We take it for granted. Familiarity breeds contempt. Now, we all remember when we first come to Krishna consciousness. Just think back for a moment to the time when we first came to Krishna consciousness. But of course, when you start as a young guru kuli, you probably don't want to remember that time. Because probably it's just dumb day in the guru kuli and you're so small and you're struggling on your own, you probably don't want to remember that time. Painful time. But for all of us who came to Krishna consciousness, how excited we were. How fortunate do we feel we were, isn't it? How excited and how appreciative we are of everything. Everything is so new, everything is so exciting. Everything we just become illuminated like a light bulb. Think back to those moments and keep it locked up in your heart. Always remember that, those moments. This is how we should feel all the time. It's only some out of complacency we forget. And then we just, business as usual. So, this opportunity of greatness is offered to everyone. Because, as we said earlier on, we are all children of Krishna. We are all children of God. And it is our rightful inheritance. We are all rightful heir to the opulence of Krishna. It is not just meant for a selected few. Anyone, any jiva, can make a claim to the kingdom of God. And it's available to anyone. It is not like, oh, you have to be born in a Brahmana family. You have to be born in India or with an Indian body that you can do it. No. But who knows? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Lord Nityananda Prabhu, Lord Nityananda, when he saw the kirtan, the dancing of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he predicted that this chanting, dancing, will be spread to every town and village of the world. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may have placed so many in different parts of the world. We may have all been placed in different parts of the world. And when the time comes, okay, now, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. Wake up to your true nature. Wake up to your true mission in life. So we don't know who is who. How do we know? We may look at someone, sometimes we think, oh, just another spaced out bhakta. We just send him to the space cadet training. we do not know who each person is, what their role is. After so many years, in the movement, you can have this humbling realization. You never really know who is who. Someone you think is big devotee, where are they now? Someone you think is just some space out cadet, but he somehow manages soldier on and soldier on, And after years and years, then the time became ripe. Now doing big, big thing. And I was amazed with one devotee. His name is Krishna Baladev. French. I think it's French or maybe Spanish, but I met him, but I have not seen him in 30 years. Alright. I met him when I was a bhakta in New Mayapur farm. He was a cowherd boy. He was taking care of the cows. Right. So, and he was very nice to me. I was a new bhakta. I remember him. And then some years later, maybe like 20 years or so later, I heard he went preaching in China. And he started doing big preaching in China. Of course now he's banned from China. He's in Taiwan, based in Taiwan now, but he was one of the main preachers in China. At that time, who would have thought? Devotee, simple devotee, just taking care of the cows. Right? You don't think of someone taking care of the cows, a great philosopher, a great preacher. But after years, you just do steady devotional service. And I've seen also some of this devotee also before known as very quiet, unassuming devotee. And now they are initiating gurus. Initiating spiritual masters, have disciples everywhere, so much responsibility. So the point is that to have the right to the kingdom of God is not by a so-called seminar descendant. Our right to the key to the kingdom of God is through disciplic succession. Even by disciplic succession, one may claim, oh, I am the disciple of so-and-so. I am the disciple of so-and-so. Okay. Dhanyavad. Dandabad. My obeisances. But what are we doing? Are we acting in a way that exhibits that position? Are we living up to that position that we claim to be in? Even Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who has so many disciples, over 60,000 disciples. 60,000. Many. But how many of them took his mission seriously and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world? One. And nobody would thought. Abai? He was just a householder. He was just into his business. A pharmacist, just doing his pharmaceutical business. Taking care of his family. One time, some of the sannyasis and disciples, his godbrothers, they had no place to sit. They were staying in his house. So they would have always Krishna Katha going on, Pravachan, lectures, anything. Prabhupada would come home and he would sit on the stair and just chanting his rounds. And then one godbrother passed by. They were discussing about this prediction of Lord Nityananda every time in village. So he was coming out and said, how can that happen? You know, who is going to do it? Who would be able to do it? Prabhupada said, not you. Because later on, this godbrother of Prabhupada met an ISKCON devotee in one city. I can't remember the name of the city. He saw a Western devotee walking in dhotis and tilak. So he was very curious. He went up to him and said, whose disciples are you? You know, because he had heard about, you know, the prediction that the holy name of straight to every town of village, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur also saw, envisioned how the Americans, the Germans, the English, and all, they would join hand with the Bengali brothers, and they would chant Jai Satchinandana, Jai Satchinandana in Mayapur. So he saw that and he thought, who is a spiritual master? He said, it's Srila Prabhupada. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He said, who is that? He didn't know that Prabhupada has taken sannyas. I said, then he took back to Godhead magazine, showed the picture, said, Abhay Babu! Oh, that's Abhay. Oh, how did that happen? He was really surprised. But that one person who's supposed to be just grihastha, taking care of his family and his business and that, but he kept in his heart. But how can we see what's going on in the heart level? We can't see. That's why in the Shastra it says, Vaishnavaya Kriya Mudra, Ibujaya, Nabujaya. It's very, very difficult to understand the inner working of a Vaishnava, of a pure devotee of the Lord. We don't even go there. Don't second guess. Don't judge. Don't go there. Just accept what it is. So, to be a disciple in the disciple succession, to be a disciple of a bona fide spiritual master, that carries responsibility. My spiritual master is so and so. You want to say, I'm a Prabhupada disciple. Yes, Prabhu. You're very, very fortunate to have the association of your Prabhupada. You're very fortunate to have the association of this great devotee who is a spiritual master. What are we doing with that great fortune? Is our life in accordance to that status? It carries responsibility. If one is born in a very fortunate position, he carries a lot of responsibility. So, just to be born in a certain family, or just to be even initiated in a gotra, that's how when we get initiation, we are initiated into a gotra, the family, in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's not enough. It's just the beginning. It just gives us the privilege to develop further in the process of bhakti. Like as Prabhupada mentioned, even the family of Srila Prabhupada, he makes so many people Krishna conscious. But his family, although they are devotees of Krishna, but they were not standard of pure devotional service. And that's why one of the reasons Prabhupada left home. He wanted to preach. He wanted to engage his family in preaching, but they were not interested in taking part in his activities of preaching. They were more interested in just drinking chai. Just drinking tea. And it came to a point, the last straw was when Prabhupada was looking for his Bhagavatam. And his wife exchanged the Bhagavatam for chai. That was the last straw. He said, I'm leaving. He said, always leaving, going, going and coming, going and coming. And Prabhupada said, this time I'm not coming back. And he just left. Took one aprasa. He started his preaching in Jhansi. And then his Back to God magazine, he already started Back to God magazine before, and then started translating his books, lifelong work of translating Srimad Bhagavatam. And went to America and preached. So that's amazing. In old time. So Krishna, he's the well-wisher of the entire universe. And every action that he takes, whatever he wish or desire, is mainly for the benefit. It may not seem to be like that initially, but it's ultimately always beneficial for the entire universe. Especially if one is a devotee. One should have this faith that whatever happens in his life is always for the best. While it's happening, it may not seem to be like that. Like Krishna, it's just like the parents dealing with the child. The parents telling the child, "No, you should study. You should spend time studying. You should do your homework." What does the child want to do?
Play.
He just wants to play. And when you restrict his movement, he gets upset. He thinks this is unfair. You are so unfair. You are so unreasonable. Why are you treating me like this? Why are you restricting me? You are preventing me from experiencing happiness. So similarly, sometimes we are like that, a bit rebellious. When we don't have this faith, our faith is not strong enough, we become rebellious. When Krishna deals with us in a certain way, and we question, why is it like that? Why is this happening to me? Why is that? I don't like this situation. But we have to understand every situation we are, the lessons to be learned. The lessons we learn. You should develop that habit, the attitude to see every situation which externally seems to be favorable, unfavorable. Whether favorable, unfavorable, we all can always turn it into favorable. Every situation we are in, we can always turn it into favorable. If we open our eyes, open our ears, open our heart and mind, and try to learn the lessons from those situations, and somehow connect it to Krishna, that becomes favorable. So every situation can become favorable. It's just a matter of our mindset, our attitude, how we see it and how we learn from it and how we relate it to Krishna. Because if we are acting on the premises, the foundation of our action is that Krishna is a well-wisher. Krishna is our benefactor. He's our father. He's our most loving father. He just wants what is best for us. If we allow him to dictate us, if we just allow ourselves to be guided by him, he just wants what is best for us. And this is stated in the Upanishad. The super soul is sitting in the heart together with the jiva. And the Paramatma is just waiting for the jiva, these two birds, one bird, waiting for this one bird to turn to him for advice and direction. Patiently. But this bird, he's busy picking on the fruits of the trees. Sometimes the fruit is bitter, sometimes it's sour, sometimes it's not ripe, poop, it hurts, and sometimes it's rotten, and sometimes it's sweet. Because the jiva, this bird, is so absorbed in tasting the fruits of the tree, he is not paying attention to his best friend sitting right next to him. Therefore, it's stated in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who has controlled the mind, super soul is rich. When we are able to calm our mind, calm our senses, calm down, really calm our mind, and look into them, we can connect with the super soul. Then we can hear the super soul. Right now, there's so much clatter. It's only static. You're trying to listen. Like you turn on the radio, you know, like people they turn on the radio with the trying to listen to the Olympic Games that just finished recently. But if you don't have the right channel, so much clatter going on. You can't hear what's going on. So we have to turn the channel, tune in perfectly, fine-tune it. Our practice of devotional service is nothing but just fine-tuning. So we can really connect. So when you calm our mind down, instead of hearing all these impulses are coming in, then we can hear Super Soul telling us, finally, Finally, you're turning to me. After how many lifetimes of repeated birth and death, going through so many different species, finally you're turning to me. So, you act from this premise that Krishna is our well-wisher and our real benefactor. Whatever he does is for our benefit. From that understanding, you act. We act in our devotional service. So we stated here, an actual qualification to be a representative of the Lord, namely unalloyed surrender to the will of Krishna. So when we surrender Krishna in this way, then Krishna will empower us to act in so many ways. Some days, some years down the road, we talk about, yeah, I remember that Bhakta team in the Melbourne temple, where is he now? Wow, he's doing some big preaching in Timbuktu or Timbuktu somewhere. No, it's somewhere in Kalimantan, you know, all these headhunters. He's turning all these headhunters into Vaishnavas or whatever. Who knows, you know? Really? Wow, the last time I know him was just washing dishes in Crossway. Now imagine, you know, that one day it will be a... So be careful how you deal with Bhakta Tin from now on. Some years down the road, he'll be the big guru of all these headhunters. The guru of the headhunters. We never know. How do we know? Krishna can take us in our life in so many twists and turns. And I never imagine myself coming to Australia. I never wanted to come to Australia. It's the last one, the last place I wanted to be. Somehow Krishna brought me here. And it's nice he brought me here. And I get to meet so many nice devotees. And get the association of so many devotees who can help me in my Krishna consciousness. So thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Aniruddha told me to have to wait after I ask. Any questions? He said the other day I finished too fast. Didn't get a chance for people to sink in and think about the questions. So I'll sit here for half a minute. If there are any questions or comments. Yes?
How to improve chanting?
Pardon?
Your realization, how to improve chanting?
How to improve chanting? Just chanting here. Let's do it. Let's follow the Nike slogan. Let's do it. Of course, there are whole books written about it. When we avoid offenses, the 10 offenses, especially the first one, Vaishnava Parag, then we get the power to chant. In fact, sometimes we may be struggling with our rounds, with the chanting. That endeavor itself is purifying. The endeavor itself is purifying. It was what?
Nichiren,
yeah, I'm sorry.
Sorry, very, very tall, very beautiful.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, a great person. Like even Prabhupada's granddaughter was an initially East contemporary devotee. She was living in Mayapur. She was married to a local devotee, had children. Was practicing Krishna consciousness there. Mahaprabhu. And unfortunately, just almost 2 years ago, in a flood, she drowned in the flood in Mahaprabhu and passed away. Of course, when you are born in a family of great devotees, you get a good start in life. But still, ultimately, free will is there. That's why it's stated, I think, if I remember right, there are three things. It's the samskara, right? Of maybe four things. Samskara, just the gabbadana samskara before the conception. You perform some purification rite to attract a soul to take birth. In our ISKCON movement, Prabhupada recommend chanting of 50 rounds. Chant 50 rounds before. And then there's, of course, even when the child is in the womb, one can still influence. You're listening. I remember that when my wife had my daughter, she was sewing for the deity, so all day she was just listening to Ramayana and Mahabharata, especially Ramayana, just over and over and over again. And after she was born, every night she go to bed, I would tell Ramayana story and put her to sleep. Now, very short version of it, from beginning to end in just 10-15 minutes or whatever. But she grew up very very attached to Ramayana. Sitaram, and she has daughters, Sitaram daughters, Lakshman, who said. And now, of course, their karma is there, and ultimately it's their desire. So you can influence with Gabbadana Samskara. You can influence by giving them so much as their child when they are small children and give them. But ultimately, their karma has some influence on it, and especially, more importantly, their own free will.
What are you talking about? Families and stuff reminded me of a question I had about that thing about if a devotee goes back to the spiritual world, then seven or whatever generations he decides to be devoted.
Yeah.
Why, if our families are just sort of like we're born into them not by our own choice, then why does that matter? Like, why would that be the case? Why would it be the case that our families live around this? They're sort of just a random,
Just show the power of the influence of the devotee. Or pure devotee. The influence. Because after all, the family member, they have contributed to your life. They have done some service to you. So therefore, the greatest service you can do to repay them is by becoming a pure devotee. That's the greatest benefit. You can benefit them also just by being around. You benefit them so much. For example, I always see, but I think they know. Like my brothers and sisters, we come from a very poor family. Okay, father had no work, mother sometimes odd jobs, and I remember my brother, she was very good in studies. He just get A's and A's. And he was admitted to university in Malaysia. At that time there were just maybe two or three universities. So very difficult to get into university. So he was admitted to university, and just after that I left Malaysia and went to Europe. So after a short time he had to quit university, because he just could not afford to pay for everything, you know. Yeah, just after he quit, two scholarships came. But it came too late. So he was working and studying in the night, and then. Anyway, very soon after that, I became a devotee, but now all of them are doing very well. All of them are doing very, very well. And they take very good care of me. They always buy me things, they always give me money. And then recently, just Recently, they even offered to sponsor my tickets from back to Malaysia. Always. Sometimes just come and they just... Like my brother visited me in Auckland. He went traveling recently. Then just before he left, he said, actually I have some money left over. $2,000 just gave like that. So, because I'm practicing devotional service, not a pure devotee, but just because I'm practicing devotional service and they are serving a devotee, they're getting so much benefit. So I make a point that the best way I can benefit them is by remaining on the path of Krishna consciousness. When they do service, they're actually getting so much benefit. And this is just material benefit. There's spiritual benefit that is not visible yet. I don't preach to them. But I noticed over the years how, because I'm steadily practicing Krishna consciousness over the years, I mean, there's a certain respect there. And because of the respect, actually they're respecting the devotee, they're making advancement. They're doing seva, they're making advancement. Understand? So when you become pure devotee, the influence will be so much more immense, so much more powerful. You see, you become like a Prahlad Maharaj, even a great, great demon like Hiranyakashipu can be delivered. Alright. Let's stop now. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.